Welcome to Q&A with T&K. They've surfed the interwebs. They've contemplated, ruminated, and speculated. They've checked the teletype, and now they're ready to answer your questions. Here are your hosts, Tiffany and Kristen.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to Q&A with T&K. I'm Kristen.
I'm Tiffany. Hello. Good morning. Good afternoon. Good evening.
Hi. All right. We're back for another question.
We're back. We've got a loaded question today that might be a multi-parter. The question is, how do you deal with problem behaviors, from Anna in Washington? That's a big question.
Such a big question.
Kristen, first thoughts.
Oh, you're just flipping it on me.
Oh, yep.
First thoughts. My first thought is, how to deal with challenging behaviors is that you need the environment. Like, that was the first thing I wrote down on my piece of paper when I was taking notes about this, is that the environment needs to be different.
Yeah.
If you have a lot of challenging behaviors where it's overwhelming for you and you're asking this question.
Yeah.
That could be part of the reason. Then there's part two was that there may be underlying issues there to those challenging behaviors that aren't solvable by the environment that's around them during the day. So
yeah,
that's
and
my first
I also want to add the teacher to that list. What are you bringing to the table that might be causing a problem behavior?
Ooh,
that happens.
Yeah, that does happen. So just being able to reflect on your own practice.
Mm-hmm.
So,
more than anything, though, I want to think about what is a problem behavior.
Right, because it could be something totally different to people.
Yeah.
So for you, what is a problem behavior for you?
To me, I'm using air quotes, a problem behavior is something that isn't controllable by the child.
Mm-hmm.
That requires an extra level of attention or help. I'm thinking specifically of kids that might need more supports, whether that's communication supports or social emotional supports, to help them be more successful at school and feel more confident in their abilities. I don't think, more than anything, I define problem behaviors by what they are not. I don't think being energetic is a problem behavior.
No.
I don't think being powerful is a problem behavior. I don't think being too smart for your own good is a problem behavior. I don't think pushing boundaries is a problem behavior, because being a kid is not a problem behavior.
Right. No, it's not. But I think oftentimes we want, like, teachers want to be in control. Many times teachers and providers want to be in control. And when we're not, it feels like everything can spin out of control very quickly.
Yeah.
But I think that if you can release that and become a yes environment and more of a hummingbird teacher versus a helicopter teacher, or a hummingbird parent versus a helicopter parent, things just go so much more smoothly. It's amazing. I've taught in both types of programs where it's more teacher dictated, in one preschool program to where my program is now, which is very child dictated. And just that switch of trusting children in their learning and lots of time to play. We don't have problem behaviors.
Yeah.
And I think that's just a switch in the way you think about it. Like how you're saying, I don't see energy as a problem. And if you can think about it that way, like, that's just being a kid. And you have to change some things within yourself in order to, like, it's almost like a switch that you need to do a 180 degree turn. And think about it in a different way, that they're 5, they're 4, they're 3, they're 2. Let's meet them where they're at.
Mm-hmm.
And not expect them to be something that they're not.
Exactly. But that still kind of leaves the question of what is a problem behavior unanswered.
Okay.
And I want to propose that a problem behavior is a behavior that you as a teacher feel like you need outside help to strategize where that child needs to go next. Because as a teacher, you understand child development. You should understand what being a kid means.
Right.
When you need help understanding what trajectory a child is on.
Yes.
That, to me, might be a problem behavior.
Yes. I love that. That kind of like completely compartmentalizes it in my brain for me. That, you know, there are some things that can be challenging. Like,
yeah.
If you're trying to have circle time and the kids are completely like wrapping their arms around each other and rolling around on the floor and it's completely distracting you and the children who are sitting next to them because they're getting bopped in the head by feet. I mean, that's
not a problem behavior.
It's not problem.
It's annoying.
Yes.
But that to me is like, they don't want to do this right now. Let's do something that is more gross motor.
Exactly. Except for when it happens, then does it become a problem behavior when it happens every single time, whether it's gross motor or not? So if you have a child who always has to have his hands on somebody else, no matter if you're doing a gross motor activity or not.
Yeah. Then no matter when it's uninvited or not.
Right. Yeah. Then is it a problem behavior? Would something like that, would you seek outside help for?
I don't know.
We've definitely had that kid before. Yeah.
I feel like everybody's had that kid where they just have to touch everybody all the time. Is it a combination of things? That behavior specifically might be really frustrating to their peers and to them.
Right.
And if you're having trouble scaffolding their learning about personal space.
Yes.
At what point do you seek outside help?
Right, especially
that's totally up to you as a teacher.
I know, but then it's like they're five and they possibly love to like be in other people's space bubbles. When like that just does not seem like something you would, bother parents with. Like your child can't keep their hands to themselves ever. And we've really been working on it, but we really like to seek outside help. For that, like, that's odd, too. Like,
yeah, I think that there's a difference between referring a kid for special education and asking another teacher, asking an OT friend.
Yeah, that's true.
The SLP, like, hey, do you have strategies for this that I could use?
Okay, so that's
another. I'm not going to use names.
mm-hmm. So that's another thing where it kind of splits then into two more categories almost, where there's the challenging behavior that is on the verge of being a problem behavior, but maybe isn't quite where you would seek like special education help or refer them. So like start the, what we call in Minnesota, the referral process.
Yeah.
But where you would just, you know, ask on your favorite Facebook group page, what would you do?
Yeah.
It's kind of like, yeah. So,
or you could send a question into
Q&A with TK.
Oh, yeah.
We solve the world's problems right here.
One early childhood education question at a time.
Woohoo! Hey, that should be our little bit for Jeff that he needs.
Oh, yeah. We'll splice that out.
Okay.
So what to you would be a problem behavior that would immediately send you into thinking, wow, I need help with this?
Is it one specific behavior, or is it often a
flurry of behaviors?
I think children who that you're going to need more help with often exhibit more than one kind of red flag that maybe we're not providing the absolute best education for this child. We don't have the tools necessary to be able to safely give this child what they need.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it could be like headbanging, or when, you know, it's time for cleanup and it's you've given them a 5-minute warning, but at cleanup time, it's like a complete meltdown, banging their head on the floor. Like things that are very, like if people know, you'll know when there's like, oh my gosh, this is more than what I can do right now. I think you just know as a teacher. Do you think?
Yeah.
Or not?
I think so. Yeah. I will say yes.
And it usually is more than, like I said, more than one thing that's happening.
Yeah.
So I think you just have to trust your gut. If you know that you can't provide, like they're in children are endangering themselves or endangering other children, like making them feel not safe anymore, I think that is like a time where you need to say, we need to get some other help here.
Yeah. Because when I think about referring a kid, I think about me needing more tools in my tool belt.
Yes.
And I don't know if that's a common conception among parents or anyone who hasn't been through the process. From the teacher's perspective, or from my perspective, anytime that happens, it's because I feel like I have tried everything that I have tried. All of my tools have been used, and
yes,
nothing is helping.
Right.
I need more tools. That is, I think, when it becomes a problem behavior.
Yes, I think so too.
But
so,
I still don't know if problem behavior is the right word for that.
I know. Challenging.
Challenging behavior.
I don't know. Is challenging a better word?
Yeah. I guess because I don't think that all kids who are referred for special education exhibit problem behaviors.
Problems. Yeah.
Yeah.
So maybe we need to have a different.
Yeah. When I think of a problem behavior, I think of violence.
Yeah.
I think of extreme anxiety. I think of inability to communicate.
Yes.
But I still don't know if communication is... I mean, maybe if the inability to communicate is, I'm going to stand here and throw this chair across the room because I don't know how to tell you that I'm hungry.
Mm-hmm.
For a 2-year-old, that makes total sense. For a 6-year-old, it's a little different.
Totally. So I think in all... Maybe not
know.
Babies... But I think anything that is like aggression, I think aggression is a really challenging behavior.
Yeah.
Hitting and scratching and biting and kicking and hurting others. It's not okay.
Mm-hmm.
And that, I think, is a challenging behavior.
Yeah. And I think a lot of kid behavior is seen as problem behavior.
Yes.
When you're 3 and someone takes... your giraffe, and so you smack them, that's not a problem behavior.
No, it's a total, reaction.
Yeah.
It's normal.
Yeah. But when you're 5 and you think it's a great fun game to choke your classmates every day, that's different.
That is different.
That's not a developmentally appropriate response. You know,
right.
You
so
see
I
what
think
I'm saying?
As a caregiver, you have to definitely know, you have to know childhood development. Like, it all comes back
yes.
to how the development of the child and the ages that they're at, developmental stages that they're at. So I think that's important if you're a caregiver and you don't know that you need to find that out.
Yes. There mm-hmm. is a book on the subject. Is it What If Everybody Understood Child Development? Is that the name of it? I'm looking it up right now.
I don't know.
We'll come back to that.
Okay. So is there a why behind this? Like, why do children... So I'm trying to compartmentalize this a little bit more. So we have the behaviors that we need more help for, and
mm-hmm.
the behaviors that it's being a child and it's normal. And we have to talk through those things with the children.
Yeah.
So I think that's a really good way to think about it. And if we can think about it that way, then you can expand on how you can change the environment and you as a teacher and your thought processes, how you can change the environment and how you think to meet the needs of the children. And then it's a whole nother topic to talk about what other tools you can add to your tool belt and people that you can involve to help with the challenging behaviors that are hurting other people and hurting themselves.
Yeah.
Maybe?
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Did I'm you find still... the name of that book yet?
Oh, yeah. It's called What If Everybody Understood Child Development? Straight Talk About Bettering Education in Children's Lives by Ray Pica. Pica? Hmm. P-I-C-A?
Have you read it?
No, I haven't, but I've heard it's great.
Hmm.
Now I'm scratching my chin. Do we have another Q&A book club?
Ooh.
Brewing with all of our discussion about problem behaviors that's to come.
How long is the book? Is it a good, like, how many stars does it have on Amazon?
It comes highly recommended from the Facebooks. And it is 160 pages. Not bad.
Yeah. Okay, so we've kind of defined, you know, that we like the word challenging better than problem, and we know that we have to split it into two sections. So should we do another podcast? Should we do split this into two more podcasts?
I think we definitely should.
All right, so let's wrap it up with what would you do? You okay with that?
Yeah.
And then you'll have to tune in, because I think then the next one we'll do, if you agree, is we'll talk about the environment and you as a teacher and what the challenging behaviors that are solvable within the room and you as a teacher.
Yeah.
We can talk about that in depth in the next episode.
Get a little more nitty gritty. Okay. Am I supposed to have a what would you do ready?
Yeah, but if you don't, I do.
I've got one.
Okay.
I just thought of one. Right, we're good. We go. Okay. Ready? What would you do? Kristen, it's a beautiful spring day on the playground and all the bugs are out and about.
Okay.
And the kids have caught a bug. And they bring it over to you, and it is hands down, no doubt about it, absolutely a highly poisonous spider.
Oh.
What would you do?
And they have it in their hands?
Yeah, they're just chilling.
Oh. and I know by looking at it that's poisonous.
Yeah, it's like a black widow or something. You can just tell.
Oh, my gosh. My first instinct would be, like, the first thing I thought would be, okay, get a piece of paper and, like, get it to crawl on the piece of paper and get it away. But you don't have paper outside, usually. Well, we do, because we color and stuff outside. We have an art area. But, in general, maybe you don't have a piece of paper sitting there. So then I think a leaf. Well, a leaf is really tiny, and then it's going to crawl on me, and I don't want that to happen. A stick. Do you think you could entice it onto a stick? And then, would you kill it?
Yeah.
I would too!
But they...
Kill it. But then... I don't know.
Where did it come from?
I have thoughts about that too. Yeah! Where did it come from? Because we don't have really poisonous spiders in Minnesota. Do you have them? Where you
are? Yeah.
Oh!
I mean, I thought of it because I'm sitting in my basement with the Black Widow right now.
No!
It's cool.
You have a Black Widow spider in your basement?
Yeah, that's where they live, is in basements.
Oh my gosh, what if it falls on you?
We're far away. Mutual respect.
Are you going to kill it? Are you going to kill it?
I mean, I can't see him right now. He's over there somewhere.
Oh my.
Don't tell my friends who are scared of spiders about what we're talking about right now, okay?
Okay.
Okay.
Okay. So I would kill it. Sorry if you're a listener who wouldn't, but I would.
Would you? The getting it out of the children's hands is what stresses me out the most.
Ah, I know. That's why I was like, a leaf? No, that's not big enough. And then I'm like, a stick? But what if it doesn't crawl on the stick? I think I would, like, try to do a really, like, a whack with something and, like, just whack it out of their hand.
My fear is that it's happy in the hand. It's not biting the kid yet. That transition. I've got sweaty hands just thinking about it.
Man, I would try the stick method. Get a claw on the stick.
Mm-hmm. Definitely not the flick, because we all know that if you flick it, it disappears forever. Or it's connected by a web and it swings back and it's really mad.
It attacks you.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh.
Ugh.
So then what would you do if a child got like bit by a poisonous spider?
Ugh. Call 911? What do you do when that happens?
I don't know. How poisonous are they? Are they like deathly poisonous or they just make you sick a little?
I don't know. I've never been bitten by one.
You should probably research that since they are prevalent in your area.
Yeah. I don't think they're like, I don't think we'd ever find one at school unless we were digging through an old wood pile. But.
Well, I'm sure that there's listeners, you know, around, I know Australia has lots of crazy poisonous things, like big snakes. Gross. Like, I wonder what they do. Oh, actually, I think I read about it a little bit.
Snakes seem scarier than spiders to me.
Like a forest program that is like in the bush in Australia, and that they just talk about, you know, watching where you're going and like, you know, rustling things with a stick before you climb in them, just because what if there's a snake hiding out in that brush underneath?
Like, there's an element of risky play.
Yeah. Yeah, we're worried about jumping from a spot that's 2 feet high off the ground. Like, isn't it funny how risk is so different? Like,
yeah.
Yeah. How are you going to make sure that there's not poisonous snakes on your playground in Australia or Arizona? Like,
yeah.
Where they're prevalent.
Or scorpions? Bleh.
Oof. Ew.
Got to check their shoes before they put them on after nap. Might be a scorpion in them.
Oh my gosh.
There's the level of risk I'm not comfortable with.
No.
Oh
my goodness. All right. Well, Tiffany.
Well, Kristen.
It's been fun.
Send us your questions and stuff.
Yeah, totally.
Yeah.
See you next time on
Q&A with T and K.
Goodbye. Bye.
This has been Q&A with T and K. Thank you for listening. From serious to silly, Tiffany and Kristen are eager to answer your questions. Just email them to q4tnk@gmail.com. That's q4tandk@gmail.com. We'll be back next week with another episode. Music by Kurt Pearsall. Tiffany's sweet, sweet hubby.
This has been an Explorations Early Learning Upstairs Studio production. Oh.